Listen to WGN Radio's newest podcast, Behind the Badge, Illinois, hosted by David Hochberg. Behind the Badge, Illinois views current events through the eyes of Illinois law enforcement leaders. Tune in. Visit WGNradio.com/behindthebadge.
It's 12:20. This is Dean Richards, Sunday morning / afternoon here on WGN. Talking on our Food Time show, Chicago Radio's original cooking and dining show. The All Things Edible program heard every Sunday at this time. And we got to get one more grilling bout in here with the holiday weekend. I know lots of you, including myself, be out on the grill this weekend. You can try out my delicious recipes that I was just talking about that we've got posted all over the place, so you can check those out. Or you can take the advice of our expert, Jamie Previance, with Weber Grills. Jamie, how are you doing there, my friend?
I'm doing great. Always good to be with you, Dean. How are you?
Doing very well. Nice to have you on here. I can't wait to get behind the grill today and get some things going. We have just like absolutely amazing weather in the Chicago area this weekend. Not too hot, not too chilly, not too rainy. Amazingly, it hasn't snowed yet. We haven't had one hailstorm yet, anything like that.
Nice.
So, you know, we're looking at a good weekend. Do you think people cook differently as we approach the fall? That's what I tried to do. And I was doing a segment on TV the other day, and I tried to do some things that are a little bit autumnal, you know, because it's that time of year.
Yeah, I think so. I think that's actually the food that we really crave, and maybe we put it off for a little while. You know, maybe it's bikini season or, you know, sunbathing weather.
It is for me.
Yeah. Well, it's not for me, I'll tell you that, and people are happy about that. But, you know, it's those big roasts that really, you know, succulent meat, the briskets and the ribs and the, you know, the whole chickens that are smoked and the pulled pork. And that's the stuff that really satisfies the soul. And I think it's particularly good this time of year, you know, going forward.
I did the other day, I did a whole chicken. I hadn't done a whole chicken in a long time. Usually just because it's quick and easy, you know, you throw a couple of chicken breasts on there or, you know, a couple of pieces here or there because it cooks so much faster.
Yeah.
But I'll tell you what, you know, a whole chicken roasting gets that nice smoky flavor. I mean, there is really something to a slower cooking process on some things. It really makes a big difference in the taste, doesn't it?
It does. It's kind of cooking as nature intended, I think, right? I mean, the chicken is whole for a reason, and when you cook it whole, it just has more integrity. It's certainly juicier that way. You know, anytime you cut something up into small pieces, you tend to dry it out pretty quickly if you're not really careful. But when you leave it whole and the bones are in there, it has this way of kind of protecting itself from the drying process. And it just tastes really, really good.
Yeah.
Particularly if you add some smoke. I'm, of course, a big advocate of a little bit of smoke or sometimes a lot of smoke. And I like to do my chickens on the rotisserie.
Uh-huh.
If you haven't done that before, I really recommend it because it's even better than just turning your ordinary roasted chicken. There's something about the turning process that just self-bastes the chicken. So it's particularly juicy and it's nice, evenly bronzed all the way around. It's really a great way to do it and fun.
Is that something that's easily adaptable? I mean, you know, a lot of the Weber grills, you know, any grill, sometimes have the machinery already set up for that sort of thing. But if you have a kettle, if you've got, you know, a grill that you've had for a long time, is that something that's, you know, easily adaptable with a few pieces of equipment?
Yes, there is an adapter for the kettle. It's basically a ring that goes on top of the kettle, and then the rotisserie sits inside that ring. And then you can put the lid right on top, and it works really well. And then the gas grills often have a little slot in the side of the wall of the lid.
Right,
you can imagine
on the
that.
Sides, right, yeah.
Yeah, and you can attach a little motor there and slide a rotisserie spit in, and it works great. It's kind of got this, you know, medieval, you know, King Arthur and the Knights quality about it. I think it's really fun.
if it was really King Arthur, you would be standing there and turning and, you know, and rotating it yourself by hand. That's how it was done back in the day.
Getting ready for the jousting match afterwards.
That's how the knaves did it back in the day. You didn't have any electronic mumbo jumbo. No, that's I've had it that way. It's really good. But here, this is what I did. I have, you know, one of those racks that, you know, like a beer can style of chicken, only I don't like using a beer can. So I have an actual rack that I bought at a cooking store. You know, it's like nonstick. It goes right, you know, right into the middle of the chicken and acts the same way. I'm just not crazy about an aluminum can. You know, cooking for an hour and a half my chicken because as we've discovered today, I am a germaphobe crazy like that.
I hear you. Yeah, you never know where that can has been, right?
I just don't like that. I just don't like the idea of the ink and the paint and all that stuff on the food. But so that's how I did it. It was about an hour and a half, I guess, maybe an hour and 40 minutes. Basted it a little bit. Salt, pepper, oregano is really all I put on it. It was absolutely delicious.
I bet. Good for you.
How do you recommend? If you don't have the rotisserie set up, how do you recommend whole chicken cooking?
Well, I usually throw some sort of herby wet paste on there, like, you know, a lot of garlic and rosemary and thyme, maybe a little bit of mustard and some olive oil. I'll just smear that all over. This is kind of a Provençal style. I used to work in a French bistro in San Francisco, and I did this for days and days, and it's just so good. If you can let that sit on there for a couple hours, that really helps to penetrate the meat. And then you just put it on that spit and let it go. And I throw a little bit of hickory chips on there or some oak, whatever I happen to have, for the first 30 minutes or so. And that's really the key, I think. Again, that's smoke. And not too much. Don't go the whole time. Otherwise, it gets kind of sooty. But for the first half hour, it just comes off. And it has this amazing color. That's another thing that smoke does, is it creates this dark mahogany kind of patina on the surface of the chicken. People look at it, and they just start drooling immediately. It's like, oh, my God, that's the most gorgeous chicken I've ever seen.
Of course, because we eat with our eyes before we ever open our mouth, right?
Right.
What was that paste that you put on it again?
Well, it's usually garlic and rosemary and thyme with a little bit of Dijon mustard, of course, some salt and pepper. And you just make it a sort of a smearable paste. We'll thin it out with a little bit of olive oil so that you can get it all over the surface of the chicken.
Okay. All right.
And it really works nicely.
That sounds fantastic. We've got lots more recipes. You know what I want to tap your knowledge is pulled pork on the grill. I know it takes a long time. But it really eludes a lot of people. I want to get your recipe for that. Other recipe choices that Jamie Proviance from Weber may have. Maybe some of you have some suggestions or questions for the expert. 312-981-7200. We're going to go to the phones next on WGN. Have you ever done the beer can chicken method, Veronica?
Once, quite a while back. It seems like it turned out very tender and moist. I mean, it was good.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I like the method. I'm just not crazy about putting a beer can in the middle of my chicken. It's just a thing for me, which I mentioned earlier, because it's aluminum, number one, which there have been a lot of studies about.
It's not so good for you.
Aluminum and food and Alzheimer's connections. I'll let the medical people decide all that. I'm personally not comfortable with it. But also the dyes or the paints, whatever, that are used on the cans.
Right.
I'm a little uncomfortable with that because, I mean, your grill gets up, you know, 400, 500, 600 degrees.
It's melting some stuff.
That's what I think.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
Stanley says, Stanley, you do this all the time, you say, right?
All the time, Dean. So
how
here's the deal.
How you feeling?
First, I have my wits about me. First and foremost, the temp on a beer can chicken never gets up to that degree where you're melting any kind of aluminum. So there's no molten anything. The alcohol kills any germs or whatever that there might be on the outside of the can because there's actually beer in it. And the first thing you do is you take a whole chicken, you prep it, you clean it all out, you rub olive oil all over it. Then you take rock salt, which some people may call it margarita salt. It's the same salt.
Right.
And you rub it all over. And then you take any kind of rub you want, and you put that all over the chicken.
Right.
And you just stand it up, and you incandescent heat. So you take your, you put it off the flame.
Right.
Off the flame. The beer can is pristine when it comes out. Believe me. And it's fine. I do Thanksgiving dinners and invert a can in a turkey for Thanksgiving on the grill. And it's delicious.
What kind of can are you putting in a, on the grill. What kind of can are you putting in a turkey? Is it like a high C can or?
No, just a regular beer can.
A regular beer can holds up your turkey? I mean, you must have it propped up some other way.
You throw it on a rack and you invert the can. So instead of opening the top of a can on like a beer can chicken, you put a hole at the bottom of a can and you kind of shotgun it. Remember college? Kind of shotgun that beer for about 3 gulps and you invert it.
Okay.
And it does the same thing. It's the same process and it's outstanding. It's the best chicken or turkey you're ever going to have. It's moist.
I know it's delicious. Yeah, I use it's a vertical roaster. I use a vertical roaster. Same principle. So, you know, same everything. It just doesn't have the beer component to it. And somebody sent me a note saying they agree with me about the aluminum and the paint and all that stuff.
Yeah, that ain't happening.
So what they do is they wrap the beer can in foil first. So. Still aluminum, but they're eliminating the paint issue, which Stanley does not have a problem. Stanley, you know, seems like he's got all his faculties.
Thank you.
Like it hasn't affected you one bit.
I haven't lost it at all.
The only sign of insanity that I can tell in you in any way, Stanley, is that you're listening to the show. That may say something.
I love his show.
Appreciate the call, bud.
All right, thank you. Bye.
Thanks very much. Jamie, you want to chime in on the controversy here? Apparently we've started something even bigger than Hillary and Donald Trump here. With
imagine that.
To beer can or not to beer can?
Yeah, well, I'm not a medical professional, but I did want to throw in that the Weber does sell something called a poultry roaster, which solves the problem for people like you who might have some concerns. It looks kind of like a baking pan, a small sort of 8x8 baking pan, and it has a little cup in the middle and then something on top of the cup that actually holds the chicken in place. And you can put whatever you want in that cup, whether it's beer or wine or water.
See, there you go.
And it's perfectly safe, and it's actually a lot easier because the chicken stands up on that flat platform, so you don't run the risk of something falling over, which does happen occasionally. And another thing I want to mention is even if you are using the beer can, the key is not to use too much beer because it's only on the grill for about an hour or so. And if there's too much beer, it just takes too long for that beer to heat up to the point where it's steaming and creating the effect that you want.
Yeah, the vapor.
So there should really only be maybe a half a cup of beer in there or less.
Half for the chicken, half for the chef.
That's right.
That seems about reasonable to me. Let's get to Cicero. Your name is Cicero, is that right?
Just like the street. How you doing?
Nice to have you with us, Cicero.
Oh yes, I haven't talked to you in a while. I have the big Weber grill, which had about 32 inches, and then I had the little 18-inch Weber grill, and that was tell how great your product is. It went through a fire. That wooden handle burned off, and the aluminum legs, but the body and the top were still intact.
Look at that. How about that?
I believe it.
What I wanted to know is, I see the new Weber grills out, and they have the big round bottom. Do you have the ones? Can you still get the ones that have the three eyes on the bottom and the one dial on the top?
Three eyes on the bottom, one dial on top. I think the answer is yes to that. I'm not exactly sure we're talking about the same grill, but
the one 50 years ago, because the other Weber, my 30 or 32.
Oh, 50 years ago, that's going back a little ways.
When you say three eyes on the bottom, are you talking about the ventilation thing on the bottom?
The ventilation, that's right.
Yeah, okay.
Where you could dial, yeah, right. So, yeah. You had three on the bottom and one on the top.
Oh. Well, now they all have basically three slots on the bottom that allow the ventilation, and there's usually an ash sweeper there that allows you to open and close those vents as much as possible. So,
but see, with the older ones, you could turn it to which way the wind was, and you would turn the top for it to come in on the bottom one way. And then go out the top on the other way.
I would imagine. I mean, you must sell accessories and things for old grills, on Weber.com. It may be what you're looking for there, but I would say, Cicero, if you've had that grill for 50 years, you've gotten pretty good return on your investment there.
No, I'm trying to replace the 18-inch that got burned up in the fire.
Attaboy. That's fantastic. I love that. Take a look at Weber.com. That's where you can find all sorts of accessories and things like that. And hopefully you can find what you're looking
for. If you want to talk to a real consumer rep as opposed to some cookbook guy, call 1-800-GRILL-OUT, and they'll be able to help you. If you can provide your serial number, although it's probably a little hard to read now that it's been through the fire. But call them up at 1-800-GRILL-OUT, and they'll answer your question.
All right, thanks a lot, and I certainly appreciate it. I was waiting for you.
I'm glad you called in, Cicero. Thank you very much. Appreciate the call very much. How about that for could that be a commercial for you guys at Weber? I've had my grill for 50 years. It went through a fire, and I need to replace a part.
It's fantastic, and I have to say it's not unusual. I mean, I hear that all the time. I think actually Weber has a poor business model because this is often the case where people just hold on to these things for decades.
Yeah.
So good for us. I mean, good for the consumer.
I got to say, it's a good product. I've had mine for years and years as well. All right. So the great controversy, pulled pork. Where do we start with this? I did a variation of this on TV the other day, a quick version of pulled pork. If you didn't have 6 hours, to wait to do this the way you're supposed to, I think that's what you're going to tell me, that it's going to a long time. So what I did was I got like 4 pork tenderloins, cooked those guys up, kind of medium rare. I didn't overcook them. Chopped them up real small into the barbecue sauce. You couldn't tell that it wasn't real pulled pork.
Oh, wow.
And much leaner. Pork tenderloin, same fat content as a chicken breast. So much, much leaner, much healthier, and just as delicious. And I didn't have to do it. Didn't take me 6 hours to do it.
Well, that's very clever. I applaud you for that. It makes some sense to me because pulled pork really comes out of whole hog cooking, right? That was the original concept going back to the 1500s, 1600s. You'd get 100 people or, big crowd together, and they'd cook a whole hog, and they would have a pig picking, and they would go after the whole thing, including the tenderloin and the loin and every part of the pig, really. And over the years, we've sort of broken it down, and we've decided that the pork shoulder is where you get the best meat. And so people who make pulled pork today focus on the shoulder. But, the original concept was the whole hog. So you're just using another part of the whole hog. Now, as you say, it's leaner, so it's probably not going to be as rich and succulent. But maybe you want leaner for other reasons. I still prefer the shoulder if I have the time. You're right. You're looking at least an hour per pound. And I don't think it makes much sense to go smaller than about 4 pounds because it goes back to what we were saying before. When you cook a whole piece of meat, a big piece of meat, it's going to be better in the end. It's going to be juicier. It won't be as dry. So I use something usually 4 to 5 pounds. You can buy shoulders as much as 20 pounds. I mean, that's what the real pros use. But yeah. 4 to 5 pounds, you can get it done in about 5-6 hours. And it's really true to the original tradition of whole hog cooking.
So what's the process? So let's say we have 5 pounds.
The process is remarkably easy, actually. you put it on the fire and you let it go. You don't really do much at all. I mean, I can share a couple little things, but the key is the heat and the smoke. So you have to get way down low. If you try to cook this thing at 350 or 400, it won't work. You will dry out the surface before the inside is really done properly. You need to be down around 225 to 250 degrees to do this right. And so you might want to get yourself a smoker to do that because it's designed to hold that kind of temperature. Or you can, if you're good at working your kettle grill, or if you just want to turn the dials on your gas grill, you can do this, provided you can find some way of adding smoke. But on a kettle grill, I show a method in the new cookbook, Weber's New American Barbecue, for something called the snake method. And this is a great way of maintaining low heat on a charcoal grill. You essentially create a half circle of briquettes around the perimeter of your kettle grill, and that's your snake. And you light one end of the snake and let it burn slowly, almost like a fuse, for as long as you want. And the longer the snake, the longer the cooking time. But if you do it about halfway around, that'll last a good 5 hours. And it never peaks and valleys. It never, you know, goes up and down like you do if you have to constantly be adding charcoal as if you were cooking a chicken or
something.
So, roast chicken.
One piece of the charcoal is lighting the next one in the, you know, the quote snake.
Exactly, yeah.
Along
and
the
you
way.
Put
so
some
you have
chips.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Sort of a consistent heat and kind of a low heat throughout.
Yeah. Yeah. It works really well. You can Google it and look it up. It's really becoming kind of a standard practice now. I usually put a water pan down there with it, which really helps to create some humidity inside the grill, which is important also for the smoke ring. Now we're sort of getting into what, you know, the real pros look for, but that pinkish ring on the outside of a good pork shoulder is what's called the smoke ring. And in order to achieve it, you need some humidity inside the grill. You need the surface of the meat to be a little moist. And then you just let it go. I mean, presumably you've seasoned it with a nice rub, and you've added some smoke at the appropriate time. I let it cook for about 4 hours, just unattended. And then I usually take the internal temperature. If it's around 160, I pull it off the grill, and I wrap it in foil, maybe with a little bit of sauce brushed on it, and then put it back onto the grill to finish. And that's just your kind of assurance that it's going to be really moist and juicy, because the sauce or the apple juice or whatever kind of liquid you put in there will basically kind of braise the meat a little bit till it's super, super tender.
And you get those nice kind of outer charred layers still at the same time, right?
Right. Yeah, you don't want to do this too early, because then you prevent the development of the crust, or what the barbecue guys call the bark.
Yeah.
That's
yeah.
really tasty stuff.
Yeah, that's good stuff.
I mean, a really good pulled pork sandwich has that mix of a little bit of bark with a little bit of that really juicy, succulent meat from the inside. And when you hit that, you know, with a good slaw on top or whatnot, you're in barbecue heaven.
That's pretty good. I got to say, my pork tenderloin method, it only took me about 20 minutes, half an hour, something like that. Your way sounds way more delicious. I got to say that.
Well, your way sounds pretty good for a Wednesday night, you
it's
know,
just,
when
yeah,
you just
mm-hmm. fast. If you want to, you know, you want to do it fast, that's all.
Yeah.
You know what else I've done? Actually, what I did with that chicken that I roasted, I shredded that boy up and I put a little barbecue sauce in that. And it's also a nice, healthy alternative to it's like shredded chicken. Also very delicious.
That sounds good. And I want to give you one more idea, because if you do have a big piece of pork and you've spent, you know, 5, 6, 7 hours cooking it, sometimes you have leftovers. And I have a recipe in the new American Barbecue book for pulled pork patties. They're sort of like crab cakes, but they're made with pulled pork. So you take that meat and you bind it with a little bit of egg and breadcrumb, and you fry it in a pan, and then serve it. I serve it with a little Carolina-style mustard sauce.
Nice.
And it's really delicious, because you sort of recreated the bark on the outside, that crispiness from frying in the pan, and then you dip it into a little bit of sauce. And, you know, that's something you can do on a Wednesday night. You come home, you've got, you know, Sunday night's pork shoulder
Absolutely.
That's been sitting. And then you've got a really good pulled pork variation in a matter
amazing.
Of minutes.
That sounds absolutely amazing. I love that. Let me take a quick break, 12:49. When we come back, maybe a seafood recipe or two on the grill. Jamie Previance with Weber Grill. The new book is The New American Barbecue. We'll get to your calls, too, at 312-981-7200. It's Dean Richards, 12:53 on WGN. And we continue with our guest, Jamie Previance from Weber Grill, author of The New American Barbecue, offering up some barbecue recipes and suggestions and taking your calls at 312-981-7200. Always love doing seafood on the grill. Jamie, I guess I do salmon probably more often than anything else. I think super easy. Some people find doing seafood on the grill intimidating for some reason. I find it endlessly easy. to do on the grill. What about you? You got some good suggestions for us?
I think it's easier than most people fear. A lot of people have had a bad experience with it. Maybe they've used fish that wasn't so great or wasn't firm enough. Salmon is a great choice because it is so firm. It almost has a meaty kind of texture to it, so it's easy to turn. So if you're a beginner, stick with that. Swordfish is another good one. Of course, the shellfish are pretty easy, the shrimp and the scallops. Stay away from the really delicate ones, or if you like the really delicate ones, you know, use a fish basket or use a perforated pan down on the grill, or use a cedar plank. That's even the easiest one of all, because there you don't even really turn the fish. You just put it on the plank.
Yeah, you're basically just baking it on the grill, right?
Yeah, you're roasting it. And as long as that plank is starting to smoke a little bit, you're getting the additional flavor there. That's a really nice way to start, I think.
When you're doing shrimp or some of the smaller ones, do you use a basket then? What's your preferred method?
Well, if they're large shrimp, I tend to put them right on the grill. If they're like the little rock shrimp or something, I often will put down one of those perforated grill pans. It kind of looks like a cookie sheet with holes in it.
Right.
And you just throw the whole mess of rock shrimp in there after it's gotten really hot. So you preheat the pan because it's only going to take a minute or two for the stuff to cook.
Right.
If you leave it on there in a cold pan, it'll just sort of get dry and leathery. So then you just put it on there and you're sort of like sauteing on the grill. You give the pan a little shake and they all sort of roll around and turn over, hopefully. As opposed to going in there with tongs and trying to turn, you know, 100 little rock shrimp over
right.
one at a time.
It's a little bit tedious. Use a similar, I know the kind of pan that you're talking about with the holes, but I've also seen them where they're like a wire, they're like wire grates almost. So there's like plenty of heat coming up.
Yeah.
And it's impossible for them to fall through. They're like a dollar, these aluminum grates. I buy them at the Jewel store here in Chicago. They're like a dollar, probably less than that because they reduce them. You know, toward the end of the grilling season. Bonnie is on the line with a seafood question. Bonnie, you're on WGN.
I have had no luck with lobster tails on the grill. They are either so dry or they're not cooked enough, and if you put them back on, then they get kind of mushy. So is there any way that you can help me?
Sure. One of my favorite things to do on the grill, actually, and I was just in New England a couple of weeks ago. I think I had lobster every single day, which is quite a treat. The first thing is just you have to make sure that they're fresh. Oftentimes we're buying frozen lobster, and you have to just acknowledge that if that's the case, you're sacrificing some of the moistness of the fish. But you can still make a good lobster tail. So what I do is I cut down the back of the shell there to open up a passageway for the heat to get in, because you want these things to cook fairly rapidly before they dry out. The other thing is I often put skewers down the lobster tail to keep it from curling. I don't know if you've ever had that problem, Bonnie,
yeah.
But the skewers help. And then when all fails, you know, a good basting of garlic butter, I think, does wonders for...
Solves everything, right.
Yeah, right.
So when you're saying cut down the back of the shell, you're not saying to cut all the way through the shell and the meat. You're just saying to enough to open up some space between the meat and the shell.
Yeah, you almost want to butterfly the shell open on both sides so that you can get heat in there a little bit faster.
But do not cut the meat.
No. No.
Okay.
Leave the meat alone.
All right.
Any other kind of prep for the lobster tail?
Well, make sure, you know, you're cooking it over direct heat, I hope, and you want to expose the flesh as much as possible to that direct heat.
Okay,
this is a quick cook process. You don't want to slow roast these.
Because that's where it'll get tough on you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Most seafoods cook pretty quickly.
It's so lean. You have to get it on and off pretty quickly.
How does she know what's enough?
Yeah.
How does she know when it's done?
I don't know.
Well, it's a matter of touch. You can just touch it with your finger or with a skewer. You know, it should feel fleshy and not rubbery. I know these are hard terms to sort of do on the radio, but
you are so scientific.
But I know it's not supposed to be. It is supposed to be opaque, right?
Yes, it is supposed to be opaque. Yes, but not like a pencil eraser.
And remember, when all else fails, garlic butter, garlic butter, garlic butter. Good luck. Good luck to you, Bonnie. Thank you very much for the call. And Jamie, thank you very much for joining us. People want to get more info, Weber.com. And the new cookbook, again, is?
It's called Weber's New American Barbecue, a modern spin on the classics. You can get it at Weber.com or any book retailer.
Yeah, some fantastic recipes in there. Jamie Provines. Have a great weekend, Jamie. Thank you so much.
And you too.